Welcome to the She Wore Black podcast. I'm Agatha Andrews. Today I have debut author Sydney Shields, and I'm releasing this episode early because she is such a delight, and her book, The Honey Witch, hit every note that many of us need right now. I simply couldn't wait to share this conversation with all of you, so you get it early. I have The Honey Witch in my bookshop if you want to support both the podcast as well as independent bookstores nationwide at bookshop.org/shop/SheWoreBlack. If you want another way to help out my show, you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, and leave me a review wherever you get your podcasts. You can also join my Patreon community, buy merch, or make a coffee donation through the links available on my website at SheWoreBlackPodcast.com. Thanks for joining me today. Now, on to the show. Well, listeners, the day has come. I am finally here with Sydney Shields, and I am so excited. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I feel like we've been working on planning this for so long. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I've been promoting it in my socials and everything already. This book is as lovely as the cover, which is an incredible cover, and it delivers on the promise. And I cannot wait for everybody to read it. Congratulations on this debut novel.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's I think we are 5 days and some odd hours away from pub day now.
Yeah. Well, at the time of recording this. Yeah,
when
this will be out in the world when they can get their hands on the book. So
that's so wild.
Yeah, isn't that wild? It's going to happen.
Time is weird.
Well, why don't you let our listeners know what The Honey Witch is all about, just in case there's someone who doesn't already know.
Yeah, sure. So The Honey Witch is a Regency-inspired cottagecore fantasy that I like to pitch as Bridgerton meets Practical Magic. You got a dash of Howl's Moving Castle in there, sprinkle of Halloween Town. It's my debut novel coming out May 14th. 2024. We follow Marigold Claude, who is a bit of an odd one out in her family, and she reunites with her estranged grandmother to become a honey witch, which is a type of witch that uses different types of magical honey for her spells. Of course, that this power comes with a curse that she will never be able to find true love.
One of the things that I was really moved by, I did cry a little bit just because, you know, I lost my grandmother last year. So reading this was really, it was really touching to me, very sweet. And I love that you said that your book was written to give your grandmother the ending she deserved. And it's interesting because I also read and had on the show Lindy Ryan with her book, Bless Your Heart. And she said that was a grief exercise for her in the wake of her grandmother's death. And I think it's just kind of this interesting thing that we're starting to see, like older women portrayed and people kind of tapping into their love for their grandmothers and great grandmothers. Your book is stylistically very, very different. However, the palpable love that you both have shown in your work is unquestionable. Can you speak to what readers can learn about your grandmother from this story?
I would love to. My grandma Kathy was the most incredible woman. We were extremely, extremely close my entire life. She was a gifted storyteller, an incredible writer. That's something that we always did, that we bonded over deeply, was just like creating characters and spinning up worlds and like making mud potions like that. And we did that up until I was in college. Like, this never stopped. This was what our relationship was. She really made me believe in magic in our own special way. As she got older, we had those talks about her death, and I just sort of had this like hazy, rosy view of what it would be like. I felt like I would know exactly when she died. I was like, I will feel it. Like, there will be a cosmic shift. I'll know it, and it'll be peaceful, and that's what it's going to feel like. But it wasn't like that at all. Nothing about it was what I had imagined or prepared myself for in any way. It was sudden and it was awful for me. And just like the thing that angered me about it was I felt like it was not good enough for her because she was awesome. She was so awesome, you guys. Just a wonderful, wonderful person. And I just felt like I lost myself after it happened. And so this book was something that I felt like I needed to write to sort of find my way back to myself and back to her. When I was a kid, she once told me that happiness and determination were two sides of the same coin. And when I wrote this, it was like I could hear her saying that in my head the entire time, that like you have to be determined to find happiness when it feels really far out of reach. And so that was what this was. It was like a determination to claw my way back to happiness in the wake of the loss. And so I really hope that through this book, you can see this fiercely feminist character that shines through, and her very wild imagination, and her "I can do it all by myself" attitude.
Your profound love for her definitely reflected on the page. I also love that, like, she knew her own mortality and was like, okay, here's what you got to do. You know, here's what you to expect. And she did everything she could to prepare, you know, whether it was through relationships, whether it was through witch knowledge, care of the bees, like it was just such a palpable intelligence and energy. And it was just really wonderful to see, because we don't, you know, one of the episodes I just recorded with somebody else was called Cronelit, because we don't see women of a certain age portrayed in fiction the way we really should. They have so much to offer story.
Yes. Oh, I completely agree with you. This is on one of my bucket lists that when I am older and wiser, I cannot wait to write a quote unquote coming of age fantasy following like a woman in her 60s. That is my dream book. I cannot wait to write that. I feel like, I am basically a teenager at this point. I'm not, I'm 26, but mentally I'm a 26-year-old teenage girl, and I do not feel like I have the wisdom to do that idea justice, but I can't wait to do that one day. I completely agree with you. I love those stories.
Well, that's where I think if people are wondering where the Howl's Moving Castle element comes in, because there we have a character really kind of learning about age and understanding age and what it looks like and how it feels. And I saw that here with the woman who kind of, I mean, as old as she was, she sort of suddenly realized, oh shit, I'm this age.
She's like, okay,
I
let's
guess I got
start.
stuff to do. Like, you know, she was always so caught up, as we all are in our daily lives, with living literally the everyday experience, to where it crept up on her so fast, her age, regardless of the fact that she was 100 years old. She's like, oh, okay, you know, I've been doing all of this work all of this time. And that's so relatable. Do you find yourself just kind of forgetting that time is passing?
Yes. I have a fraught relationship with time. I like at times like especially now, every day feels simultaneously like an entire year and a single blink, like especially leading up to publication. And I was on the phone with my mom earlier today, and she was the one who was like, "You gotta remember to slow down and appreciate everything and have fun with it." And I was like,
Yeah, I know.
and
I
I
know.
just know that I do need to like slow down and have a handle on that and enjoy all of these things.
Listen, I am so here for her reminding you to enjoy this, because this is not only is this a debut for you, but what a remarkable book. I agree with your mom entirely. Take your moment and embrace it. This is a remarkable book. I'm so excited for everybody else to read it. I do hope that you just have a moment where you can go, I did it. You know, I did
Thank
it.
you so much. That's so sweet. Like stuff like that, like being able to connect with people who resonate with it and just like hear how you felt about it and how it reflected in your own life is just so beautiful. It's like it's a feeling that I don't even know how to describe, because it's something I like, this is my debut. I haven't had this before, and it is like it really is like magic. It's just incredible. I'm like, I feel like there's just with every person that reads this book and talks to me about it, I'm like, oh, you know a part of me now. Like we just have like connected in the cosmic lattice, haven't we? I love it.
I love that. I knew I was looking forward to this interview for a reason. Well, one of the things that I was really excited about is because I've been talking about cottagecore a little bit. Like, I've been writing about it and talking about it, and I'm going to have an episode about it this summer. So I'm glad I got to read your book before I do that. And one of the things that I'm talking about with it is that your book is particular captures like everything I speak about when I'm talking about cottagecore and what we'll feature on the episode, because sometimes people may dismiss this concept as like, oh, it's just quaint and it's aesthetic, but it doesn't really have story or it doesn't really have depth or whatever. And I think that's not true. I think that cottages are sanctuaries where women have the space to learn their own gifts, find their magic, develop their power, even if those things are fundamental life skills. Because a lot of times, when there's a power dynamic, a battle and a power dynamic, fundamental skills are prohibited. Like, I don't know if you read A Sweet Sting of Salt by Rose Sutherland. That's the sapphic Selkie story that's been out recently. I had her on the show as well. You know, the person who took the skin of the Selkie and was basically her partner, but you know, he had the skin. It was not a lot of autonomy there. But like, he withheld the learning of language from her because he knew that even just knowing language, his language, would help her in a power dynamic. And we talked about that on my show. So even if it's cooking, even if it's like health care, like just basic fundamental self-care is often like knowledge that's withheld in a power dynamic. So women finding even, okay, now I know how to cook. Okay, now I know how to garden. Now I know how to do all these things can be hugely empowering. Did you, and then other times it's like, let me find my magic. If you read Circe, you know, it's when she's isolated on that island where she finds her magic. Did you approach this book from that headspace, or did these themes develop out of your interest in the setting?
That's such a good question. When I decided on the setting of this book, it was largely inspired by what I consider to be the ultimate cottagecore poem, which is The Lake Isle of Innisfree by William Butler Yeats. I discovered this poem in 7th grade. It altered my brain chemistry. It is about a magical isle. It's about Innisfree and a tiny home on it, surrounded by a bee-loud glade. And this, like the moment I encountered this poem, it just planted itself so firmly in my mind. I could see it so clearly. And it was a regular happy place that I would daydream about all the time through childhood. And I think I knew going into this that what I wanted to explore was the idea that giving yourself to your purpose is not only good for you, it's good for the world around you. And you need to grant yourself the space to pursue what sets your soul on fire. And sometimes that does come with a bit of isolation. I think in times where I've been able to carve out a large chunk of time for myself away from everything and everyone, and surrounded by nature, is when I feel the most connected to myself, my purpose, my art, all of those things. And so it just felt very natural to have this story there
Yeah.
in my version of Innisfree.
It's interesting that you say that. And I know that everybody's life experience is different. There are people that find each other when they're in high school and live happily ever after. But like, I was an only child, so I spent a lot of time by myself, especially as a Gen X only child. I was really by myself a lot. And I didn't get married till I was 35. And so I lived on my own for a while too. And so not only did I grow up spending a lot of time by myself, but I lived as an adult woman by myself for a long time. I would travel by myself. I had a little pickup truck that I would drive around. I mean, there was a lot of independence. And I feel like one of the reasons, for example, why I do have such a happy marriage is because I had the time and isolation that we're talking about to like live, like have a positive headspace, you know, to really get into who am I? What am I doing? What's my purpose? What do I want from life? All of those things. And I just feel like these stories really reflect how important that is for us.
I love this. I am also an only child, and so I think I have always been quite comfortable with being alone and like entertaining myself and making my own art out of nothing. That I
Yeah.
think is just like an only child requirement to be very imaginative. And that I think is another reason why I was so close to my grandmother. You know, I didn't have any siblings. My mom is an identical twin, and her twin did have a bunch of kids, and we joke that we're half siblings because genetically speaking, we're half. I'm an only child, and so I really resonate with what you're saying about that.
Oh, there's so much to offer in these books. People just need to also really understand that, aside, and you know what? I think there's also power and pleasure. There's power in the pleasure of quaintness and beauty and in the charm of a cottage in the fantasy
Yeah.
that we write. There's power in that.
Absolutely.
You've written a fantasy book that takes place in the Regency era and write about tattoos in a deeply compelling way. And one of the things that I thought was really fun about this is that you also made them really sexy.
I did. I couldn't help it.
Well, but they're doing character work too. You show beauty and vulnerability. You show bonding between characters through these tattoos. And we so rarely see tattoos featured at all, on women in historical fiction. How did you arrive at including this, and what can you tell us about women tat and tattoos in history?
I'm
She's
rubbing my
like,
hands together.
she's rubbing her hands like a little cricket.
So
She's
like the
got things to
central,
say.
I do have things to say. I love this question and nobody has asked it yet. So when I saw this, I was like, yes, like
Ah, that makes me
let's
happy.
talk. I love it. So I think the central theme of this book is supporting women's right to choose what happens to their bodies. It's about feminine bodily autonomy. Lottie being a tattoo artist, I thought was just such a gorgeous foil to Marigold, who's sort of been a doll her whole life. Like we see that in the very first paragraph, that she's dressed in clothes that she hates, that don't fit by people who don't understand her, who won't let her present the way she wants to. And Lottie's tattoos are like a reclamation of herself and her body. And they serve as an inspiration to Marigold to take ownership of herself. And I think we see in the first part of the novel, Althea, Marigold's grandmother, leads her to her purpose. And then the tattoo scene is very sexy. And also the start of Lottie leading Marigold to her true self, which is just as important. I mostly researched like the mechanics of tattoos for this era and how it would be possible. Most of the culture, from what I learned, stems from sailor tattoos, pieces that are commemorative from travels. So Lottie, as a character, is a bit revolutionary for the time, turning her sketches into her own tattoos. But it just felt so necessary for the story because I think that if anyone is deserving of a reclamation of their body through art that is literally designed to heal, it is women. It is all women. It is cis women, trans women, any women who have ever felt like someone tried to take control of their body and their choices.
So I know that I was going to do this towards the end of it, but we may just do it now because what you were talking about women's bodily autonomy, I took s pictures of so many passages. I'm showing her like how I
Oh
would mark through. I have all these
so
sticky
crazy.
notes. Look at all these sticky notes.
Oh, Agatha, I'm obsessed with you. I'm obsessed with you. This is gorgeous.
Look at that. I was sending.
Oh my God.
And I would take pictures of these things and send them to other authors who I knew would be moved by what you were saying. And all of them are like, oh my gosh. And they wanted more pictures. They asked me for more pictures. And they're like, this is on my TBR list, like right up at the top now. Because I knew how important these things were to all of us. Body autonomy is one of the things, and this is what I say with cottagecore. Everything that I was talking about with this level of isolation, providing us with the level of independence, providing us with the time and space to learn ourselves, celebrate ourselves, all of these things, just be ourselves,
Right.
are as much about agency as any gothic ghost story, because ghost stories with women are also about agency. And these two things mirror each other. So people I know that have written ghosts, werewolves, I mean, my friend Rachel Harrison wrote Such Sharp Teeth, and she that's about, assault and body autonomy and the female rage. And it's we can tackle this topic in any number of ways, in any kind of aesthetic, in any kind of setting, and it's all as valid. And so one of the things, so I sent her, for example, this picture of you saying, especially because she wore the werewolves, it's where you say, she scrunches her nose in a way that makes her look like a lap dog, so says her mother, a bitch. Aster once said, before she knew exactly what the word meant, Marigold laughed, then said, what is so wrong about being a bitch? It is the closest thing a girl can be to a wolf. And I just loved that so much because that is the first time I've ever seen anything like that. And it was just so wonderful and speaks to everything that you were just saying.
This makes me so happy. That's one of my favorite lines from the book. I personally have always identified as a wolf girl. I was definitely the wolf kid on the playground, and I feel like this book has absolutely led me to connecting with my fellow wolf girls. If you just feel like compelled to howl at the moon once in a while, this is the book for you.
This is certainly the book for you. Validated. I've read it. I can agree. And then you go on. So she's having a conversation with a perfectly charming, perfectly handsome man who should be someone she should consider, who's already wanting to marry her after one dance, or a night spent with snacks and dancing, rather. And he says, "You are beautiful and full of life, like springtime," Mr. Notley says. And she asks him, just so for listeners, for context, "And why would those qualities merit promising myself to another? Perhaps there's a reason you cannot marry the spring." And I was like, oh my gosh, this is getting so good. I have to highlight and send pictures. And he says, "But I could marry you." And then she goes on to say a few things, but ends this thing with, "You only see springtime. What happens when I am winter? I will tell you, Mr. Notley, when winter comes, you will freeze." And I was like, oh my gosh, I had to put the book down. I had to take a moment.
It's just so true, though. It's just like that is, I'm losing my words, but it is so true. It's just, I have always, I think I grew up in a small southern town where I felt like I never fit in. And there were often times where I would feel sort of a kinship with someone and try to spark up a new friendship, but it would be this ephemeral thing that shifted alongside me. You know, I think a lot of us, like artistic, creative, imaginative, complicated women, are contain universes, contain many seasons, and there are so many like prismatic elements of meeting a charismatic, confident woman that are just so gorgeous and so often stifled by people who only want the version that they met that day one. And I think that that is something that Marigold yearns for through the book, and it's like something that I have experienced too, just wanting people to accept all of you in every season, the warmth, the cold, the scary, the howling, the singing, like all of it.
Oh, seriously. Well, there's another part in on page 21 that I wanted to talk about, because it's something I speak of a lot on my show, and it's the kind of writing and the kind of subject matter that deeply appeals to me. And you say, yes, she's a grown woman, and is that not magic in and itself? To have survived this long, despite the world's penchant for beautiful dead girls.
I love this
Marigold,
line.
well, because Poe has talked about like the death of a beautiful woman. Like we all know that line is like the most poetic, of all. And I'm like, oh Lord. But we have thrived on that in Gothic. That's what we love to do, right? So you go on to say, Marigold has grown up surrounded by the poets who propel the narrative. How romantic to die young, unstretched, unsullied, without ever outgrowing the part of the ingenue. But what happens when the girl keeps living, when she ages proudly and defiantly, without abandoning imagination or stories, or that secret wish to find magic wherever it hides? Well, then the poets would call her a witch. The way I ate that up, I cannot even tell you. Again, highlighted.
Oh, this makes me so happy. This is one of my favorite passages in the book. I remember writing this moment and like pulling my fingers away from the keyboard and being like, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm cooking a little bit here
Yeah,
with
well, you should.
that one.
I mean, that was incredible because, and it's funny, that again is something that one of the reasons why I center women more than anybody else in on my show is because these are the conversations that I cherish. I mean, this goes back to the whole idea of growing old and that element that you were talking about with Howl's Moving Castle, and just accepting the fact that aging is better than dying, despite whatever
Yes.
the poets say.
Oh, I aging is better than dying is like a life motto for me. And like, this is something that I have fought with my friends over who just begrudge their birthdays and like hate getting older. And I think this goes back to something we were talking about earlier. It's just like growing up in a small town where like death is always kind of near. I just witnessed a lot of death when I was very, very young, and it plagued me with grief for a really long time. And I think as I grew into adulthood, I started celebrating the fact that I was still alive. And
Yes.
so, like, every time I get older, every birthday that passes, of course, there's always going to be a little bit of like, oh, mortality fear flickering in the back of my mind. But there's also so much pride in
Yeah.
just still being here and still existing and being loud and taking up just more and more space because I can. It's awesome.
Well, I won't inundate I won't make this a show where I'm basically turning into an audiobook and reading the whole thing. But especially because I'm sure your reader will do a better job. But one of the things that I also really loved, going back to what you were talking about with autonomy and how this is like a feminist approach to body autonomy, is that you make sure that Marigold gets humbled a little bit because she's judging other women's choices for not being the same as hers with regard to, wouldn't you want to just be independent? Don't you want to not be hindered? Don't you want, like, judging women who want children, who want a marriage? And your grandmother says, when she asks, well, shouldn't they want more than that? She says, what any woman wants for herself is not for you to decide, and you will do well to remember that. And that is so important because we need to be kind to each other.
Absolutely. I've talked about this line a few times because it is something that my grandma said to me when I was in middle school. She humbled me, and it was very necessary. Because when I was younger, like I said, I grew up in a very small town, and I was that like that I'm gonna move to the big city
Yeah.
type. I did not move to the big city. I mean, I did study abroad and like do those things and live in bigger cities, but like I need to be close to the trees. But that was like how I operated at 11 and 12 years old. I just was a very goal-oriented kid who was very, very determined to move as soon as, like, the day I turned 18, I was like, I'm gonna move here and I'm gonna set up shop and I'm gonna do all of these different things. And my grandma was the one who was like, we gotta pump the brakes, kid, and we have to start respecting other people immediately. And I am so glad that I had someone to hold my hand through accepting myself, accepting other people, and like engaging in empathy when you're so young, you know, 10, 11, and 12, starting to understand that everybody's life is starting to splinter off in different ways. And sometimes it's going to be in the complete opposite direction of you. And that is okay. And it is not your job, your place, or your right to judge it.
Yeah. And it, yes, that is a conversation we're still having to have with ourselves. You know, it's
Absolutely.
so, you know, I think that's a really important message because you are embracing all kinds of wonderful things with your character of Marigold. And we're sitting here going, yeah. And then there's that moment where I'm like, well, but yeah, we can't tear each other down. We need to lift each other up, support each other. And I thought that was really, really important. So I like that you included a moment of humility, you know, for our main character, that because then otherwise they become superhero caricatures and not real people. So that's important, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I think with a book like this, this is the nature of bees. It's a matriarchy. All of our worker bees are female. The queen is a collective mother, and I think that there are parallels that we get to explore, and I think I explore it a bit in this novel, that the parallels between the roles that bees are playing in our lives and the roles that women are playing in society. And I was working on this novel while witnessing the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and my anger, I think, illuminated the real message of this book, is that we as women give so much to the world, and we do not, and we are not giving our bodies to.
Lordy, I love the way you said all that. I mean, I'm leading up to my B question, but I was like, yes, it's amazing information, you know, and it again goes back to and speaks to the idea that this is more than an aesthetic. These are more than just pretty settings. These are more than just charm and quaintness. You know, they have things to say and they are doing work. I'm enthralled by your bees completely. It's clear that you did your research, but what I love about this is that when I read about the bees in your work, it doesn't feel like, okay, here she's injecting her research. You know, it feels very, very organic to the story and to the narrative direction. And I love that you explained it in just the way that you did, that they are a matriarchy. So that is really important. But it also shows that bees only work as well as their environment and their caretakers do. So, like, if Marigold is not in her right place, the bees are not in their right place. If their environment, like, if the world around them is not functioning properly, they're not functioning properly. Can you speak to your research and finding that balance between research and story?
Yeah, absolutely. So the fun thing here is that the bees actually came first. I am a beekeeper turned author, not the other way around. So I used to work at Savannah Bee Company. So big shout out to Ted Dennard. He's the CEO and founder who took me under his wing and taught me everything that I know about bees. When we met, I think we
That's
just like
amazing.
really clicked. Like I found him very inspiring and just like a super nice, humble guy who just wanted to share his passion. And I found everything about it infectious. And I had a huge interest in learning more about the behind the scenes. And so one morning, Ted texted me and said, "Do you want to go on a field trip?" And I said, "Yes, I do. I always want to go on a field trip. Where are we going?" And so we left work and we drove a few hours away to an apiary during Tupelo season. And like, fun facts about Tupelo honey here. It's a very rare honey. You can only get it like maybe 2 months out of the year. It's a very, very unique flavor. Some people say it's bubblegum, some people say it's cinnamon, some people say it's licorice. It's a super unique blend. It's delicious. And while I was in this apiary, I'm not even joking, I just started crying because it was so beautiful. It was just mesmerizing. There were bees everywhere, and they were so sweet. Nobody was wearing protective gear because they didn't have to, because they had been working with these bees for so long that like they
Wow.
knew their faces. And I came in and they like let me put my hand there. You know, when you like meet a puppy or a kitten for the first time and you let them sniff your hand, it was like that. Like,
Oh my
it was like, go
gosh.
meet them, they're so nice. And they were so nice, and like they would just like crawl over me and give me little sniffies, and it was so amazing. So through Savannah Bee Company, I got to work with the Bee Cause also, which is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to teaching students about pollinators. So we started doing installations for observational beehives in the school. So there's these beehives that are like essentially made out of glass on the outside so that students can look inside and see the bees like coming in. They can see the brood, they can see like the process of making honey. And it was just incredibly rewarding. I'm still very passionate about educating people about pollinators. And so I honestly, it was hard to find the balance because I want to talk about bees all day, every day. And I think it was my agent's intervention in the beginning that made sure that I did not write 100,000 words that were exclusively fun bee facts, because I could have.
I love the fun bee facts.
I do too.
Do you have, I haven't looked at your, I probably should have. Do you have them on your like website or anything like info, like bee facts anywhere?
I have a highlight on my Instagram page of a lot of my work with the bees, and I have a bunch of blog posts about it. And also, if anybody ever slides into my DMs with bee questions, I always respond. I always tell people about bee questions. Like this lovely, lovely reader messaged me the other day about potentially keeping bees up in the winter, and I was like, "Let's talk about hive insulation. I can't wait to talk to you about it."
Yeah.
So this is an open invitation. If you have bee questions, if anybody listening has bee questions, you're thinking about keeping bees, you want to talk about them, you're hyper fixated on them, my DMs are open to you.
Oh, that is so kind. Oh my gosh. Well, listen, I mean, I could talk about this book for hours and hours, and you know, I'm just so excited for this to be out in the world. There are so many wonderful things to talk about with it. But it is such an empowering book, and I'm, you know, welcome to the book world, Sydney Shields.
Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here. So happy, so honored, so excited. So, all of those
Ever.
things.
All of those things. Well, I know that this book, as of the time of this recording, it's not even out yet. It's almost out. It's almost time. But is it too soon to talk about anything you know coming down the line?
I can tell you that I do have another book.
Okay.
It is separate from the Honey Witch. It is currently slated for 2025,
Okay.
and it is my Reputation era is what it is. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't.
Oh my goodness. Well, where can people find you? You said Instagram.
Yes,
Where else?
I'm across all socials at Sydney J Shield, Sydney with a Y, like Australia. And you can also find me on my website, which is sydneyjshields.com, and just screaming in every corner of the internet about bees.
Well, I hope when Secret Book 2 comes out, you will join me back on the show to talk about it. I'm already excited. So,
I would love to. I will love to do that. I cannot wait to talk to you about it.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. I'm so honored by your thoughtful questions and giving me the space to share these things with you. I had such a lovely time.
Thanks for joining me today on She Wore Black. If you like what you heard and want to support my work on the show, you can visit my website at sheworeblackpodcast.com for links to my Patreon, my coffee donation site, as well as my merch and my online bookshop. You can also help out the show by rating me on Apple and following me on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, and letting your friends know about the show. Thanks for joining me today, and happy reading.